So this morning we're going to do our prophecy update. Let's look at Matthew, let's start in Matthew 24. We'll end in Matthew 24, but we'll see a few things on the way. Matthew chapter 24. Now, you know, in preparing for my annual prophecy update, this is something that I kind of twiddle with a little bit throughout the year, and all throughout the year I'm collecting news clippings or emails or files on different things that different newsworthy events that could impact our future. And as I was going through all my list of stuff, I came across this one little tidbit. It's actually a year old. It's entitled The Year's Best Headlines for 1997. So you have to forgive me. This is a little bit year old, but I thought this was very interesting. Here's some of the year's best headlines for 97. One of them is, include your children when baking cookies. Is he trying to be serious or is he trying to tell jokes? Boy, these jokes fell flat first service too. What is wrong with you guys? Let's try another one. Something went wrong in jet crash, expert says. Tough room. Not a bump. How about this one? Clinton wins on budget, but more lies ahead. Sorry, that was vaguely political. How about this one? Miners refuse to work after death. I think I'd refuse to work after death, too. How about this? Cold wave linked to temperatures. Or kids make nutritious snacks. Now, that's a big headline. Boy, oh, man. Okay, let's try last one. Hospitals are sued by 7-foot doctors. It must have been the mood last night. But I was rolling on the floor. I just couldn't. Man, I had tears streaming down my. Maybe it was just the moment. I don't know. Matthew 24. Matthew 24, verse 32. Matthew 24, verse 32. I'm in 25. No wonder it doesn't make sense. Verse 32. Now learn a parable of the fig tree. When his branch is yet tender and putteth forth leaves, ye know that summer is nigh. So likewise, ye, when ye shall see all these things, know that it is near, even at the doors. Some have suggested that the fig tree here is alluding to the nation of Israel. And keeping our eyes on the nation of Israel and watching all these things that he's talked about earlier in the chapter, watching all these things coming to pass. When you see a fig tree beginning to sprout its leaves, you know that summer is near. And so when you begin to see all these things happening, verse 34, verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass till all these things shall be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. But of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. But as the days of Noah were, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. For as in the days that were before the flood, they were eating and drinking, marrying and giving in marriage, until the day that Noah entered into the ark, and knew not until the flood came and took them all away, so shall also the coming of the Son of Man be. See, the implication is that in Noah's day, just before the flood hit, everything was as normal. Eating, drinking, weddings, you know, happy times. Yeah, just regular life. Regular life. And then it came. When he talks about no man knows the day or the hour, see, the ironic thing is, see, on one hand, we don't know exactly when. But on the other hand, he says, keep your eyes open and be ready. Verse 40, then shall two be in the field, the one shall be taken, the other left. Two women shall be grinding at the mill, the one shall be taken and the other left. Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. You know, one of the things I want to try to emphasize this morning is that, you know, for some of us, we talked about the Lord coming back for a while. And it can become old hat. Do you know what? Jesus never lets us off the hook with that. He never says, well, just relax a bit. It'll be a few years down the road. Eat, drink, and be merry. Never. It's always be ready. Be aware of what's going on. Don't stick your head in the sand and just kind of say, oh, well, I just don't like to think about those things. It makes me so sad. This morning's message is not intended to make you sad. It's intended to wake you up. Jesus is coming soon. I hope you'll see this as we go through this. There's a couple of things I want to encourage you to keep your eyes on over the coming year. A couple of things I want to encourage you to keep your eyes on. The first thing is the nation of Israel. And that's always the key thing that we keep our eyes on in looking for the Lord's coming. Watch what happens in Israel. As you watch the fig leaf, as the leaves begin to sprout forth, you know it's right around the corner. Watch Israel. Watch what's going on. Israel's going through some amazing transitions right now. I don't know if you're following the news, but Benjamin Netanyahu's government. He's about out of power. Just last week, they voted to hold early elections, and their goal is to have elections and have a new government in place by May 4th, which is when the Palestinians have promised they will declare themselves a nation, right in the middle of Israel. Who knows what that will do? But the Knesset, the Israeli government, is frustrated with what's going on. These why peace accords, of course, that always struck me as funny. Why peace? Well, I don't know why peace. No, but the Y River peace accords that our brilliant president brokered a few months back is falling apart. Nobody wants to hold to it. The Palestinians certainly aren't going to hold to it. The Israeli government has tossed it out and said, we're no longer doing this stuff. Changes are in the midst. Keep an eye on what's going on in Israel. One of the candidates that the press is putting out is an Israeli version of Colin Powell. You know, everybody wanted Colin Powell to run for president, you know, because he's the nation's hero and all. They've got a man named Amnon Lipkin Shehak, who's very popular with the public, and he is a protege of Yitzhak Rabin, which means he's a guy for let's trade land for peace. Let's put peace in the land. Why is that interesting? In Ezekiel 38:11, which we'll get to in a few minutes. You don't have to turn now. We'll get to in a few minutes. In Ezekiel 38:11, it says, when Russia invades Israel, it says that it will be a land of unwalled villages. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls, having neither bars nor gates. It's not quite the way Israel is right now. I mean, they're on alert, and everybody, I mean, you know, our friends at Calvary Chapel of Jerusalem, they talk about having to go get, you know, all their gas masks and stuff for not knowing what Saddam Hussein's going to do. And in fact, with this latest crisis in Iraq, I was reading how the gas mask centers were actually quite weren't very busy at all because everybody's already got them. Everybody's already ready. They've been ready for months, you know, from an attack from Saddam. But it will be interesting to see what kind of peace will enter into Israel. Keep your eye on Israel. Things with the temple. Paul, actually, it's all through the Bible. We get these hints that there will be a temple in Israel in the last days. There has not been a temple in Israel since 70 AD when Emperor Titus invaded Jerusalem and they tore down the temple. There has not been a temple in Israel. And 100 years ago, commentators would have thought it impossible. And you look at the old commentaries, they everything's just symbolic, you know, because of course there can't be a temple, there's no Israel. Well, now there's not only an Israel, but they're working on the temple. Here's an article from, I'm not sure I got the source on this one, Rabbis Seek Children for Temple Service. This is from March 1998. An ultra-Orthodox Jewish sect is searching for parents willing to hand over newborn sons to be raised in isolation and purity in preparation for the rebuilding of the temple in Jerusalem. Only members of the Jewish priestly caste, the Kohanim, need apply. That's a Hebrew word for priest, is Kohen. And that's I have no idea what this means. It's interesting, our Secretary of Defense, his last name is Kohen. I don't know, I'm going to have lots of weird things here with throughout today. Only members of the Jewish priest Kohanim need apply. The movement for establishing the temple wants to keep the children in a secluded compound in the hills of Jerusalem. The idea is to raise a child who, from the moment of birth, will not touch the dead, not be under the same roof with the dead, and will not be in a hospital where the dead are found, said Joseph Elboim, the rabbi assigned to finding willing parents. See, In Jewish law, as we've been studying in on Sunday night, if you touch a dead person, you are unable to worship, to offer sacrifices. You can't do that kind of stuff unless you are cleansed with the ashes of the red heifer, which we don't have the ashes of a red heifer. So who can be cleansed from it? Well, in fact, who can sacrifice the red heifer? Because it has to be somebody that's clean. So how are they going to do it? This is why they're going to raise children who will never touch a dead person or touch anybody who's touched a dead person or never touch anybody who's touched somebody who's touched somebody who's touched a dead person or ever been to a hospital where somebody's died. Interesting. Interesting. Oh, an update on the red heifer. Last year we were all real big on the red heifer, and I'm sorry about all that. This January 17th, 1998. Holy cow, no more. Hopes that a red heifer named Melody would be the key to Jewish salvation were dashed Friday when the cow's owner said white hairs have been spotted on her tail. So Melody has some white hairs and she's been given the boot. But the hopeful rabbi said that Melody was pregnant with the seed of a reddish bull. We'll check in 6 months, and who knows, maybe we'll have a red heifer then. Just interesting, little things developing. Keep your eyes on Israel. Second, I would encourage you this year, keep your eyes on what's happening in Europe. Keep your eyes on what's happening in Europe. Let's look at Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. Scripture seems to point that there will be a world-dominating empire in the end times, and it appears to be an empire that is somehow related to the old Roman Empire. In Daniel chapter 2, King Nebuchadnezzar has had that. Remember, he had a really bad dream, woke up in just a cold sweat, and remember, he issues this decree that says, you know, I want all the wise men, I want somebody to tell me what I dreamed and to tell me what it means. He wouldn't even tell him what he had dreamed. And everybody went into panic, and Daniel prayed, and God showed Daniel what he had dreamed. Nebuchadnezzar had dreamed about a statue, a big giant statue, that different parts of it were made out of different types of metal, and each type of metal represented a different world empire, starting with Nebuchadnezzar, the head of gold, and then it went on to the Medo-Persians, and then to Greece, and then finally on to Rome, which was the fourth kingdom. Daniel chapter 2, verse 40. Daniel 2, verse 40. And the fourth kingdom shall be strong as iron, forasmuch as iron breaketh in pieces and subdueth all things, and as iron that breaketh all these shall it break in pieces and bruise. In other words, that the Romans would be pretty tough cookies there. I mean, they're gonna munch people and and chew up nations and spit them out, which is what happened. Verse 41, and whereas thou sawest the feet and toes, partly of potter's clay and part of iron. See, everywhere else, every kingdom had a totally different metal. There was gold, silver, bronze, iron legs. And now this connected to the legs are the feet and toes, which are partly made out of clay and partly iron. There's a connection with the Romans. They got partly iron. It says, because it was partly potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom shall be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of iron, for as much as thou sawest the iron mixed with miry clay. And as the toes of the feet, and by the way, how many toes do people generally have? 10. We'll see this clarified in another verse, in another passage. As the toes of the feet were part of iron and part of clay, so the kingdom shall be partly strong and partly broken. There's going to be a strength to it. There's going to be a weakness to it. And whereas thou saw iron mixed with miry clay, they shall mingle themselves with the seed of men, but they shall not cleave to one another, even as iron is not mixed with clay. I mean, it's not like you're baking a cake and it all mixes up into one dough or anything. You know, if you take pieces of iron and mix it up with clay, you've got clay with pieces of iron in it. You don't come up with a new element. Verse 44, and in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people. It shall break in pieces, consume all these kingdoms, and shall stand forever. Now, in other words, Jesus is going to come back and set up his kingdom. That we're talking about the times of the end. Now, so see, Nebuchadnezzar has this picture of this kingdom that somehow there's a tie. You see, there's a relationship with Rome. It's got this. It's got strength. It's got brittleness. It's at the time of Jesus' second coming. In Daniel chapter 7, Daniel had a parallel vision to that of Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel's vision was different. He didn't see a big statue. He saw different beasts. He saw four different beasts representing the same four different empires: Babylon, Medo-Persia, Greece, and Rome. And in Daniel chapter 7, verse 23, he describes the fourth empire, which is the same as the legs, the Roman Empire. Verse 23 says, thus he said, the fourth beast, and see, on the fourth beast he saw 10 horns. So the same beast, but it has 10 horns on it. Verse 23, the fourth beast shall be the fourth kingdom upon earth, which shall be diverse from all kingdoms, and shall devour the whole earth, and shall tread it down and break it in pieces. Talking about the Roman Empire. And the 10 horns out of this kingdom. So 10 horns coming out of this fourth kingdom, the Roman Empire, are 10 kings that shall arise, and another shall rise after them. He shall be diverse from the first, and he shall subdue 3 kings. He shall speak great words against the Most High, and shall wear out the saints of the Most High, and think to change times and laws, and they shall be given into his hand until a time and times and the dividing of time. Now, this is talking about the Antichrist. I may be wrong on all this. Okay, now, basically, I am a pan-eschatologist. We'll understand what it all pans out. I believe that we will be raptured before the tribulation period. I believe that very strongly, and today's message is not pointed at that, though. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. I'm not going to cry over it. You know, Jesus, that's no big deal. I may be wrong on these interpretations, but these aren't wacky, crazy things. This is what conservative scholars have held to for years. But the Antichrist will be involved in this world empire coming out of the Roman Empire that has 10 kings, 10 toes, 10 horns. It's linked to the Roman Empire. It's the time of the Antichrist. The European community began in 1951 with the Treaty of Paris. We were all excited in the early 80s because in 1981, Greece became nation number 10. So we all got very excited about that. You know, oh, let's see, there's 10 nations, you know. Well, and now as of March 1994, there are 15 members of the European Union. But we are currently on the brink of the strongest unity that Europe has yet established. It will happen January 1st. Next week. That is when the new common currency called the euro will go into effect. I'll just quote you. This is directly from the Orange County Register. I'm not cooking the stuff up here. You can find this anywhere. I mean, I'll have the reference on the website. Question: What countries of the European Union are involved? Answer: Right now, 11 of them. And they've nicknamed it Euroland. The 11 nations will switch to the euro. Austria, Belgium, Finland, France, Germany, Ireland, Italy, and Luxembourg, Netherlands, Portugal, and Spain. The other nations are waiting to see what happens to decide whether or not they're going to switch. Except Greece. They failed the test. And they haven't got their act together yet. When will the switch occur and how? The euro will be gradually introduced to member nations over a three-year period. What's going to happen is that on December 31st, 1998, the finance ministers of these 11 nations will get together and they will set, fix in stone, an exchange rate of their currency with the euro. All of their economies will now be linked. Instead of one economy going up and going down, it will be one big giant economy. They're going to be like a world-class, heavyweight economic power. They're going to have a bigger base than the United States. They're going to have 300 million people tied together economically. I mean, all these nations which have been down on the rung as far as world economic strength are now suddenly jumped up to the top. In 1999, you won't see euro coins or bills. The euro will exist only electronically in non-cash transactions, primarily in financial markets. Stocks and bond prices will be reported in euros. Large companies will keep track of finances in the euro. In other words, if you pay with your credit card, you'll get charged in euros. If you won't have coins and cash for the euros until later. The coins and bills will begin to circulate January 1st, 2002. By July 1st of 2002... all the old currencies will be phased out, and all these 11 governments will pull back their own money, and they will only use the euro. Now, I don't know if you noticed this. See, January 1st, 1999 to January 1st, 2000 is 1 year. And then to January 2001 is 2 years, and then to January 1st, 2002 is 3 years, and then it's finally in full effect half a year later. 3.5 years. Boy, that sent chills up my spine when I hit that yesterday. It's like the Antichrist, his rule will be 7 years and split into two segments. We read in Daniel, time times and a half a time. A time is one, times is two more, and a half a time, 3.5. What to make of it? I don't know, but by golly, it's very interesting. Why in the world they picked 3.5 years to phase this thing in? Incredible. And the fact that at the beginning, you will only be able to buy and sell if you have a number, credit card number. And maybe I'm getting way off here, but I just Doesn't this do something to you? Are you getting a little bit excited here? No, you probably think I'm a weirdo or something. Keep your eye on Europe. Keep your eye on Europe. Do you realize they have a president of the European Union? They elect a president every year. Interesting. Keep your eye on Europe. It will be a big player in the end times. Thirdly, keep your eye on Russia. Look at Ezekiel chapter 38. Ezekiel chapter 38. One of the events that we expect to happen soon will involve Russia. And this is the invasion of Israel. Ezekiel 38, verse 1. The word of the Lord came unto me, saying, Son of man, set thy face against Gog, the land of Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and prophesy against him. Now, see, Gog is the person. The land is called Magog. I got kind of excited this year because I finally got a little bit of a documentation on this. Josephus, in his book, in his Antiquities of the Jews, he identifies Magog as the land of the ancient Scythians, whom the Greeks called the Scythians. These are the Russians. And so this prophecy is going to be against the leader of the Magogs, the Scythians, the Russians. And say, verse 3, Thus saith the Lord God, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and I will turn thee back and put hooks into thy jaws, and I will bring thee forth, and all thine army, horses and horsemen, all of them clothed with all sorts of armor, even a great company with bucklers and shields, all of them handling swords. Persia, Ethiopia, and Libya, some of your translations might say Cush and Put, but Persia is what? Persia is modern Iran. Cush and Ethiopia are the same. Put in Libya, you know, Colonel Gaddafi and all that. They will come with them, all of them with shield and helmet. Verse 6, Gomer and his band. Golly! And the house of Togarma of the north quarters and all his bands and many people with thee. We believe that's around Turkey, the Black Sea, the area up in there. Be thou prepared and prepare for thyself, thou and all thy company that are assembled unto them, unto thee, and be thou a guard unto them. With many days thou shalt be visited. In the latter years thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel, which have been always waste. But it is brought forth out of the nations, and they shall dwell safely among. They shall dwell safely, all of them. That's a picture of Israel today. That is Israel today. I mean, 1948 when they were declared a nation, and people began to immigrate. I mean, last year alone, I think there was 50,000 Jews from Russia immigrated, and I believe they're predicting like another 100,000 in the next year or two. The thousands that have come out of Ethiopia, Ethiopian Jews that have immigrated to Israel. I mean, Israel is a land that they're bringing people from all over the world. It's open. You come. If you're Jewish, we welcome you with open arms. You come and be an Israeli citizen. Verse 9, Thou shalt ascend, talking to Russia, Thou shalt ascend and come like a storm. Thou shalt be like a cloud to cover the land, thou and all thy bands with many people with thee. Thus saith the Lord God, It shall also come to pass that at the same time shall things come into thy mind. He's talking to the leader of Russia. And thou shalt think an evil thought. Where did that idea come from? And thou shalt say, I will go up to the land of unwalled villages, we read earlier. I will go to them that are at rest, that dwell safely, all of them dwelling without walls, having neither bars nor gates, to take a spoil and a prey. That's the idea. This place is easy pickings, and I'm going to go up to take a spoil. It's the economy, stupid. The motivation is money. I will go up to take a spoil, to take a prey, to turn thine hand upon the desolate places that are now inhabited, and upon the people that are gathered out of the nations, which have gotten cattle and goods, to carry away silver and gold, to take away cattle and goods, to take a great spoil. Um, Sheba and Dedan, that's Saudi Arabia. The merchants of Tarshish. Tarshish in ancient times was considered the farthest western spot. That's, you know, Jonah fled to Tarshish. Some people have identified it with Spain. Some feels that it's a little bit further around the corner and have identified it as England. And the young lions thereof, some people have suggested, it's a possible thing. I mean, it would fit if this is what it is. The young lions thereof, U.S., the young lions of Britain. It hit me first service. You know who were the ones that just bombed Iraq? The U.S. and Britain. And we will stand on the sidelines, maybe, if that's us, and say, what, you come to raid this nation? Kind of like, the picture is like what Saddam did against Kuwait. He came down and invaded the land and plundered it, and then went home. So the idea would be something similar to that for economic reasons. We are seeing right now Russia go through an incredible economic turmoil. Have you followed that in the news? Have you been aware of that? I mean, they've been talking about rebellions, revolts. You know, right at the last minute, Yeltsin will fire all his cabinet and hire new guys because everybody's going to, like, raise up against him, you know. You know, army hasn't been paid in years. And all. I mean, it's a horrible thing that Russia is going through right now. Horrible economic times. A pastor at Calvary Chapel of Moscow came back to the U.S. for a while because he thought everything was going to collapse. They are still in great economic turmoil. There's a lot of question about how long Yeltsin will be able to stay on, both by his health and because of the economy. They are in a desperate place economically. Ezekiel says that the leader of Magog, whether it's Yeltsin or his successor, the idea will come into his mind, let's go take a spoil. Let's fix our economy and raid Israel. And you know, who are we? Well, who knows? I wonder who will be in our president, who will be in our White House at that time. This comes from the Jerusalem Post, December 12th, 1998. That's a few weeks back. Okay? Big headline. Oil found in Israel. The Givat Olam oil exploration has struck oil at a site near Rosh Ha'ayin. Givat Olam confirmed that the fluid gushing through a pipe at the Megiddo 2 bore is high-quality oil from the Paleozoic oil basin. That's the oil basin that all of the Arab countries get their oil from. And they're saying that this is the same quality, the same type of oil as that. Just south of Kfar Saba, the company believes the oil deposit reaches a thickness of 300 meters. In a year's time, the company hopes to begin drilling there. That location, known as Megiddo 3, is thought to contain 1 billion barrels and 4 trillion cubic feet of natural gas. If this proves to be the case, there will be enough oil in Israel to last your lifetime and mine, says Tovia Luskin, company's senior scientist and director. Interesting. Israel is the Silicon Valley of that whole part of the world. We get all kinds of, the whole world gets all kinds of technological things because of the engineers in Israel. Be quite a place to plunder if you're hard up for cash. Keep your eye on technology. We've often heard about the mark of the beast. Look at Revelation 13. Sure, why not? Revelation 13. Verse 16. Talking about how the economy under the Antichrist will, what will happen. Verse 16, he causeth all, both small and great, rich and poor, free and bond, to receive a mark in their right hand or in their foreheads, and that no man might buy or sell, save he that had the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. And so, you know, the idea is that there would be a mark either on your right hand or your forehead. You won't be able to buy or sell unless you have this mark. So, for years, people have been suggesting maybe that's talking about the kinds of things that we don't even blink at nowadays. You know, electronic funds transfer. You know, having your check card with you. You know, I mean, I don't want to carry a checkbook. I'd rather carry the plastic. You know, personally, it's a lot easier. Just run that thing through the card reader. You know, and there you go. And the idea, though, is that the number would be on your hand or your forehead. And some have suggested maybe this is alluding to the kind of technology we know now with microchip implants. Here's something from the Rome paper La Repubblica. Italian dignitaries who fear being kidnapped are having microprocessor homing devices planted in their bodies so police can track them down if they are abducted. The microchips, called Sky Eyes, were originally developed for intelligence use by Israeli researchers. So if you're afraid of being kidnapped and you're a big wig in Italy, you get a microchip implanted in you. The technology is there. Now in Israel, they don't implant chips in wealthy businessmen. In Israel, here's from January 1998, electronic chips for dogs. Now see, in Italy, they put it in their business execs in Israel, they put it in their dogs. Oh man, I really lost you. That was supposed to be kind of like funny or something. The new law will go into effect, which will require all dogs to have an electronic chip on their body in Israel. Oh well. Numbers. Marks. Buying and selling. It's not unthinkable anymore. I was thinking about talking about Y2K, and I will in a second, but I did find another problem. It's called the 100G bug. Experts warn today of a new and deadly threat to our beleaguered civilization, the 100GB bug. As most people know, McDonald's restaurant signs show the number of hamburgers the giant chain has sold. That number now stands at 99 billion burgers, or 99 gigaburgers. Within months or even weeks, that number will roll over to 100 gigaburgers. McDonald's signs, however, were designed years ago, and the prospect of selling 100 billion hamburgers seemed unthinkably remote. So the signs have only two numeric places. This means that after the sale of 100 billionth burger, McDonald's signs will read 0 billion burgers sold. This, experts predict, will convince the public that in over 30 years, no McDonald's hamburgers have, in fact, ever been sold, causing a complete collapse of consumer confidence in McDonald's products. The ensuing catastrophic drop in sales is seen as almost certain to force the company into bankruptcy. Oh. Nah. It's supposed to be a joke. Golly. Try to put something humorous in here. You know, in actuality, all kidding aside, you know, the Y2K thing is really very serious. You know, it has to do with how some computers, microchips, record dates. They won't know what to do when we get to the year 2000. Will they think it's the year 1900 or the year 2000? And it's not just a matter of buying a new personal computer. That's not where the problems are. The problems are with, here, let me quote. I will quote to you from Congressman Stephen Horn. He says, "The picture is a gloomy one, warning of possible breakdowns in the Medicare payment system, electrical blackouts, and telecommunications havoc if the problem isn't fixed." That was November 23rd when he was talking to the government about what he's found. Is Y2K in the Bible? I'm not sure. Some might say yes, some might say no. But it would be an it's going to be interesting to see what will happen a year from now. Don't want to be fearful, but we ought to be ready. Back to Matthew 24. Matthew 24, verse 42. Jesus said, "Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come. But know this, that if the good man or the master of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched, and would not have suffered his house to be broken up." You know, if you were aware that a thief was going to break in your house at 2 o'clock in the morning, you would stay up for him, wouldn't you? "Who then is a faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household to give them meat in due season? Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he cometh, shall find so doing." I received a phone call on Christmas from a person whose family is going through a very big tragedy, very, very big tragedy. And as they were describing to me all that's happened to them, the comment was made, "It's been a real wake-up call for us. It's been a real wake-up call for us." And I guess what concerns me is, do we have to go through tragedies to wake up? Jesus' whole point here is, open up your eyes and watch what's going on. Let that be your wake-up call. You know, my intention this morning was not to scare the socks off of you or to make you run off to Idaho and buy land or something like that. That was not my purpose. Look, people here are going to need you. The thought of our Lord coming back ought to bring comfort to us, not fear. Are you ready? Are you ready? Are there things that need to change in your life? Why wait for the tragedies? Why wait? Read the newspaper. Your Lord is coming. People, get ready. Let's stand and pray. I don't know how many, I don't know how much of this has made sense to you. I don't know how much of this you've been able to follow. But I hope one thing has come across. That's that we believe that Jesus Christ is coming soon. And if you are in any way reluctant about that, maybe God is trying to encourage you today to wake up. So that rather being fearful on his coming, you'll be ready, looking for it, even helping it come a little quicker, hastening it. You don't have to leave here this morning in a panic, wondering what should I do to get ready. It starts by you asking his help, asking Him for help. By saying, I need You, Lord.